You can feel that letter. He's moving in and out of the levels, just as he's writing it. Just as he's writing it. He's describing these different levels. Now, when you go from physical to astral to causal, you are still with the subtlest desires, the desires for pure idea, pure idea. Thought creates matter. Mind creates matter. The causal plane is the world of ideas that creates the universe. Right at the top of the causal plane is where we call what we call Godhead. The Godhead. It's the first place into the universe of form. It's the first world of form. It's the place where God created the universe. His mind, his thought manifested into the universe. His thought manifested into all the lower levels of the causal plane, all of the astral plane, and all of the physical plane. His thought manifested into all of that. And when you go back and back and back and back, you go to that place where you become one with the Godhead. You are God at that point. You are the idea that lies behind the universe. You literally are it. So you're not making believe you're it, you are it. And the funny thing is, you're still not finished. And as far as a Buddhist is concerned, you haven't even begun the trip. You're still hung up in form. Because he says, baby, it's all illusion, no matter how groovy it gets. I mean, this physical plane's obviously illusion, all a dream. Then you go to bed at night, and you go to sleep, and then you dream. Now, you notice about your dreams, they're very real, and yet they don't have any physical form. That's the astral plane. You're dreaming in the astral plane. And then when you get to the point of just pure ideas, sometimes when you're a very high physicist, or very poets you've seen, they touch just pure idea. Sometimes art or a vase or something gets so essency, you feel you are touching God by being in connection with that piece of art. Because it's pure idea. It's the idea of vaseness, if you will. That place. It's causal. It's causal plane. A mind at the causal plane created the vase. Created the vase. But then you go finally through the final door. And you go from the form into the formless, into the void, into the beyond the beyond. The Tibetan mantra is Gate Gate Paragate Parasamgate Bodhi Swaha. O wisdom which has gone beyond, beyond the beyond, to thee homage. When you have crossed the ocean of sanskara, the ocean of illusion, the ocean of desire, the ocean of attachment, you can call it whatever you will, it's all the same ocean. When you have crossed through all the form, you enter into the state of formlessness. It is eternally quiet. It's eternally quiet. It never was. Never was. Push far enough towards the void. Hold fast enough to quietness, and of the 10,000 things, none but can be worked on by you. I have beheld them, whither they go back. See all things, howsoever they flourish, return to the roots from which they grew. This return to the root is called quietness. Quietness is called submission to fate. What has submitted to fate becomes part of the always so. To know the always so is to be illumined. Not to know it means to go blindly to disaster. So says Lao Tzu in the Book of Tao. To go, you've got to go the whole trip, all the way back, before you get to the place where you see that behind all of this, there is all of this in its om, in its unmanifest form, always, eternally, that nothing's really happening at all. Nothing's really happening at all. Nothing ever happened. Nothing's ever gonna happen. There's nothing you gotta do. There's no doer to do it anyway. It's the grand illusion, and all of the groovy trips in astrology and the astral plane and occult powers and all the groovy trips of mind and all the groovy trips of God concepts and ideas and creations and all that, it's all stuff. Beautiful, exquisite. I mean, oh, wow. Because at every level it's the same trip, that the cell and the microcosm and the macrocosm and the macrocosm that's the macrocosm of that, including that microcosm, they're all the same, repeated over and over again. There are certain laws that you understand when you're in the Godhead. You see how the whole system works. You see about action and reaction. You see a lot of the laws that man in his highest moments has touched. He's touched. Just like when Einstein touches. You can see that he broke through. You understand when a man breaks through. And Einstein was a pure being, and that's how he touched it. He got beyond ego. He got into the world of pure ideas. He got to the Godhead. He saw how it was in that one little place. He went through right down the middle, right down that place. And then when you have gone all the way out, like Buddha, when he sat under the Bodhi tree and he went beyond all the desire and all the attachment that kept him no matter, kept him being God even. I mean, it's groovy to be God. You know, if you've just been a little child or been pushed around or been just, you know, a taxpayer, wow, not only can you play Nixon, I mean, don't settle for being president, be God. And then when you've used up all those desires, then you're ready to go through the door. Now, the game is that Buddha sat, and he sat there for 7 days, and he said, well, shall I just hang out here, you know, or shall I come back? And there are many beings that don't, they just finished. They're not on assignment, because they're really finished. See, many of us have gone through every one of those doors. I've been through every one of those doors. I have been into the void. Yet here I am, sitting here in form, thinking in form, seeing in form, most of the time being at the lowest level. Because my desires brought me down. They brought me back all the time. I was not free of attachments, and I had to keep coming back to the level the attachments kept me at. But if you have purified and finished with attachments, that's what renunciation means. You finish with attachments. It doesn't mean anything about what you do in the world. It has to do with your inner being. If you've gone the whole trip, then you get into the void, and you're in the void, and you are eternally, eternally in the still, quiet ocean where the lights of mother and son merge as one. It's all one. It never was and never will be. Then Buddha saw, I mean, he had a vision, and the vision said from the astral plane or causal plane, said, sent him on assignment in effect, said, there are many beings whose veil is very thin, and you can come back and teach them. And that's the bodhisattva role. Because you finally understand that though it is all illusion, it never was and never will be, at every level at which you exist, you are part of everybody else. So as long as anybody's hung up, you're still hung up. Because it's all one being, really. That's the bodhisattva problem. Till everybody makes it, nobody makes it. So what happens is you go all the way out and then you come back. He who clings to the void and neglects compassion. Now, what does the word compassion now mean? Compassion only means a true empathic understanding of how it all is, which you can only understand when you've been in the void. I mean, if somebody comes into me and they bring me their heavy burden of their karmic trip, oh, I'm suffering so, and it's so rough, and I listen to it, and I love them, and I empathize with them, and I feel the sympathy, and at the same moment that I'm doing that, I realize that they don't exist, I don't exist, the problem doesn't exist, none of us ever were, nothing's happening, there's nobody doing anything to anybody. Right? That's compassion. And at the same moment, I'm there and saying, yeah, right, I dig how it is. Compassion is being conscious at all levels. That's what compassion is. Understanding how it all is everywhere, all the time. He who clings to the void and neglects compassion does not reach the highest stage. But he who practices only compassion does not gain release from the toils of existence. He, however, who is strong in practice of both, remains neither in samskara, sanskara, samsara, nor in nirvana. He neither remains in the void nor in the world. The final place that the game leads to is where you live fully consciously in all of it, which is in nothing. You are eternal. You have finished perishing. There's no fear of death because, you see, it's just a transformation in an illusion. And yet, seeing all that, you still chop wood and carry water. Do you understand that? You still do your thing. You flow in harmony with the universe. You are beyond morality, and yet you're a totally moral being because that's the harmony of the universe. You see that to do anything with attachment is only creating more desire, which is creating more desire, which is creating more desire, which is keeping you in the game longer and longer and longer, keeping you in the illusion. And once you see through that, it can't help but fall away. What are you going to do? You get all caught up like, I think I'll become famous. Wow. Boy, am I going to become famous. And you're already laughing at yourself. Wow, man, am I going to go on that trip? Who am I kidding? All right, here I am, I'm famous. Wow, look at that, I'm famous, boy. Okay, that's that. Now what? I'm going to become rich. You ever hang out with really rich people? Busy being rich. And finally, the day comes when they say, yeah, right, I'm rich. So that was what that was about. Then they're getting ready, perhaps, to go through the eye of the needle. Until then, not a chance of a snowball in hell. That final place of pure idea is the place where yin and yang exist. It's the place where duality exists. The first place into form from the formless, you come into the place where there is energy, where there is form, and at that point there is polarization. And in order to be a truly enlightened being, you must delight in the exquisiteness of every single level. You must take joy in your maleness or femaleness at the same moment as realizing you are both male and female and you were never either male nor female. That far out. That far out. And if you get attached to being unattached, too bad. You've got a long way to go. I said before, you can't rip it off. It's like the snake's skin. It's got to fall away. It's got to fall away like the skin of a snake falling off. It's the only way it can happen. The only way it can happen. We can't rush it. I mean, I really understand how this all is, but you see, my intellect's way ahead of where I'm at. I mean, it's so poignant. It's so poignant. I mean, knowing all this, I should be an enlightened being. But there's still desires. and they get more and more subtle, and every time you finish with one, it just uncovers a new one. I mean, there are the gross desires I've got. Lusting for root beer and, you know, all of the things that still take me on my trip. Can't rip them away. I just can't not desire root beer. What am I going to do? Not desire root beer? Try it. Funny thing. I mean, vows are complete hypocrisy. You can't take vows about things. You either do them or you don't do them. You think an external vow is going to change the game? It can only change the external act. The external act has nothing to do with renunciation whatsoever. You can be having sex every night and have renounced sex. Because what you're renouncing is the attachment. And in fact, tantric sex is the highest form, is a very, very high yoga. And it's the yoga of using the sexual energies to become one with God, to go into these higher states. And when you start on any of these trips, be it yoga, I mean hatha yoga, or bhakti yoga, or gyan yoga, or karma yoga, or psychedelic yoga, or tantric yoga, you'll always go into places where you'll get big shots of bliss. Oh, boy, is it good. Remember what my guru brother said. Some people get attached to digging the ecstasy bliss. So good, man. I mean, I just haven't, all my life I've been reaching for that kind of bliss. Sex gave me a little wallop of it. A great achievement would give me a little wallop. Little bit of a drop of this elixir, the stuff, the ambrosia that Padmasambhava's holding a big bowl of. Man, I really dig that bliss. Oh, boy, have I been starved for bliss. I mean, you know what bliss is? It's total contentment, total serenity. How does that feel? You've got it all. It's like after you've eaten the best possible meal and you sit back. You know, it's like those ads of a guy that's worked hard and he comes back and he's loosened his belt and he's taken off his shoes. He's a workman. He's got his beer on the table and he's sitting back and he's got his feet up and he's, oh, you know, I can see the Norman Rockwell cover now. That's the definition of contentment. That's the eternal place, no matter what he's doing. I mean, everything he did all day up to that moment, he's still in that place when you're in the place. See, that's what I said about if we know who we are, we're not busy being in the drama. You can just know what you have known from tonight, knowing this. If you know this, you're already well, well, well along the way, I'll tell you. And I'm telling you from another guy who's just along the way with you. But I got a feeling for how it all unfolds, although there's no time in it. See, I used to be busy. People said, well, if your guru knows everything, did you ask him when you'll be enlightened? Well, that's a funny question. Because when I'm with the guru, I don't have any questions. Because he's all in everything and there's nothing to ask because it's all right. And the funny thing is, what good is it knowing? What do I care? What difference does it make? It's like if you say, where did it all begin? I mean, how did we get stuck in this dilemma in the first place? And Buddha always answers, it's none of your business. Just get on with it. When you get there, you'll know. It's not for your trivial little rational mind to figure out. You know, you're a child when you grow up. Time enough for you to smoke. You know, don't rush. Don't rush. Just be. Be here now. See, once the seed is planted, then it becomes like what's called the witness inside of you. It's a place inside of you where you see your whole drama unfolding. You see how important you're making it all. How caught, how deep, how significant, how profound. all the euphemisms you've got for making it important. Now, this doesn't mean you trivialize life. It doesn't mean you care any less for its divinity or its sacredness or its beauty or its purity. You live it with grace and with exquisite compassion, being aware of its illusion and yet fully in it. If you ever watched a beautiful Zen monk, a very old monk who was like really there, here, really here, there, wherever it is, you watch him, he's cooking food, he's lifting rocks, he's moving. You watch him walk and it's like nobody's walking. Do you ever watch one of those beings? They just walk and their legs are going and the whole thing's happening, but nothing's happening. You get a feeling nothing's happening. He's always a total rest, no matter what's happening. And that's what blows your mind when you get out of this, the kind of heads that we've got going, which don't allow us really to understand how this can be. You live out your karma. You live out your karma. The best I can tell you about karma is that if you are pure spirit, if you are not matter, but you are that eternal spirit, you are that eternal energy, you are going through a sequence, a series of illusions, if you will, that are training you to finish with illusion. And when you have finished going through all of the carnival sideshows, you begin to see that, in fact, the snake was only a rope. And these are a series of experiences designed. Your life, including your heredity, your environment, every experience you've had, every experience you're going to have, your death, the whole trip is one karmic package. And it is programmed, completely programmed, and you are going through it now. And if you understand what I just said, you then are in the position of the witness who watches your own karma happen, and that is your karma too. You got it? There's no level. There's no way out of karma. You got to understand, there's no way out. There's no way out. Except full enlightenment. When you're fully enlightened, you're done with your karma. Fully. Not for a second. Not for a second. Fully. Finish with the trip. Fully enlightened. Once one understands the possibility, once the seed has been planted, one starts to look for the ways.